Hey everybody, welcome. This is your marathon live stream. You're with the Market Sniper, the Crypto Sniper, and the Reset Sniper, and our very first guest kicking it off, no slouch at all, to get us off to great amounts of momentum and bouncing out of the blocks. It is Tom Luanga of Guns, Goats, and Gold. I don't know if I got the order right there. Tom, how am I doing?
Gold, Goats, and Guns.
Start with the metals first. Thank you very much. Delighted to have you back on. How are you keeping?
I'm thankful that I still live in Florida, where they're sane.
Good. Well, this is the Great Awakening, Tom. And we want to know and hear, since we last spoke to you, boy, hasn't stuff gone down. What for you has been the biggest penny drop? What have you felt learning? But before you even get to answer that, I'm just going to park that in the back of your head. You can come back on us on that one. The data did come in. So let's start with the most recent information. Yesterday, CPI coming in. First time, CPI month on month, 0.4 on against the 0.6. Major misses on the CPI. 7.9 expected on the year on year, 7.7 it came in. 0.5 on the core CPI, which is all those essential goods, in essence, coming in on 0.3. So undershoots on all the inflationary side. Your take on the data first before you talk about awakening.
It's not really that surprising if you really stop to think about how we've had a massive boom and bust in commodity prices, right? All the way across the board, from lumber to industrial metals to all of this stuff, right? So that busted in what, February, March, right, Francis?
Yep.
So we have to give us a 6 month lag time or so, and those prices start to, and those price, you know, come downs, because it was a spike, it was a massive spike up and a massive spike down over the course of a couple of months. It makes some sense that we were finally starting to see a moderation in year-on-year inflation. And so I think that's a lot of it. I also think that we had a 4x move in most commodity prices, and they've attenuated 40 to 50%. So they're still twice as high as they were a year ago, effectively. And that's, I think we're taking a pause here between the cost push inflation of 2021 and the loss of institutional confidence inflation I think is coming for 2023 and beyond. So I think that's where we are right now. And that only gives the Fed more reason to, frankly, with the rallies that we've seen, it only gives the Fed more ammunition to continue raising rates, even though the bond market is now trying to tell you that, no, the Fed should stop, because the US 10-year this morning is trading at about 3.81. You know, we've got a complete like downward sloping yield curve. It's gonna, the Fed keeps rising, it's gonna look like Innsbruck, right? The ski slopes at Innsbruck that I remember from the 76 Olympics, was that guy who just like ran down the hill. Like, it's going to look like that. It's going to be bad, right? But I think it's also necessary. There you go.
I like that, because overall, my opinion, personal take is that this is going to be a false top that's going to get all the people out on peak inflation calls again. All the people saying, yes, 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 that's it. We're done. It's a great reversal. And we're kind of in, we've coined the phrase hyperstagflation, where you're actually experiencing both. You're experiencing, long ago, you know, when they try to redefine recession, we were already in a recession quite clearly. Now we're rolling into the depression end of recession. So it's a true demand killer. But within that, we have such inherent, stubborn price-based inflation, such unmal and under investment in the energy complex, which is a driver on everything. Yep. And we're having so much coming up underneath us that is so stubborn it won't go away easily. Essentially, we've just had one spell now where we've had a number that's come in slightly under. And usually when you're at the top end of your inflation, there's a tiny bit of fluff. You know, you kill a bit of demand, sure, you can get a small dip. But wait till you start getting to the bone for getting to that number, getting that number a whole bunch lower. It just doesn't go. It's a monster that has to be killed small. On that comment, actually, there was the great narrative that came that we've been espousing, but that more importantly, Stanley Druckenmiller, a big name, was saying, there's never been an instance that you've gone above 5% inflation, that you've killed the inflation with an interest rate that's lower than the inflation rate. Which means currently at 7.7, if we take the new number, how can we actually rein inflation back? Short of the extreme depression levels that are also going on at the same time. What's your take and your interpretation on that?
Yeah, Francis, I know from the first time that you and I spoke, I can't remember when it was. Was it back in March or April or something like that? I think we spoke the first time.
Q1.
So yeah. At that point, the Fed hadn't started raising rates aggressively. And I, you know, spent some time trying to walk you through what I was seeing in terms of that I thought Jay Powell and the Fed were at odds with the Treasury Department and all of this stuff that I've now, you know, is now finally filtered into the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And what I find really interesting about this is that even then, I didn't think the Fed would be this aggressive. Like, I was unconvinced of my own observations. Thesis, even I was gaslit to the point of not believing my own analysis on this. So once we got the first 50 basis point rate hike, we got the first 75, I'm like, oh, no, come on, pal, keep going, 100. Let's go 150 and rip the Band-Aid off and get it over and done with. Because the reality is that you can't stop. You cannot do, well, Druckenmiller is absolutely right. We're at 4%, inflation is still 7.7. Why is everybody like screaming here? What you should be looking at is, why is the 10-year trading at 3.8%? And why is it like reversed 45 basis points since the FOMC meeting?
Yeah.
And this is capital flight into the United States. As a matter of fact, right before you and I went live, right? I went and just did a quick perusal of the markets. And the first thing I looked, one of the things I look at on a regular basis, credit spreads between on the 10-year, because I can't look at the entire yield curve because I'm not a human computer. Looking at the benchmark 10-year between the US, Italian, and German debt, right? And then the euro. We have the dollar's down strong this morning. The euro spiked to $1.03, which is impressive, to be honest with you. But we also have all of those credit spreads, well, the US, Italian, and US German bond spreads tightening by 25 basis points. 25 basis points, those spreads have tightened this morning, like within an hour. Like, the treasuries are down, you know, around 10 basis points, and Germany's up 10, the Italians are up 15. Why is that? Well, it's simple. This is the moment when Christine Lagarde's transmission protection instrument has had her bluff called. She can either trash the euro and protect credit spreads, or she can let credit spreads go and protect the euro.
Yeah.
Or market forces are beginning to overwhelm her.
Yeah.
Because of the inflation print, and now people are disgorging dollars, and she can't stop any of this. This is kind of the moment I've been waiting for months now, is to watch Lagarde, who pushed credit spreads way beyond where they should have been. Like, U.S.-German credit spreads, 10-year spread, moved back up to the 1.9 area, which is that's when you want to go short that.
Yeah.
I've been charting that for months now, and the same thing. And she's been trying to protect Italian-German credit spreads, and she's pushed that, the 10-year, down to like 2.1%, well below even recent lows, because she put the TPI in place at 2.5% between Germans and Italians. And it spiked on the Fed's, on Powell's Jackson Hole speech, back above that level. And I keep publishing a chart which says, oops, like you lost control here, Christine, after letting everybody front run the trade for a couple of weeks. We're now in the moment where, okay, now everybody really is going to test Lagarde's mettle. And I think that the midterm results actually affect, I think, some of this, because now everybody's expecting the dollar to weaken. And I think that that's a wrong assumption. I think we're going to get a nice pressure relief rally in the dollar. Dollar's going to come back on the markets, going to pressure credit spreads, and then the Fed's going to raise interest rates in December by 75 basis points. The three-month LIBOR market is telling you that it's having to anticipate another 75 basis point rate hike in December.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. It's interesting that you also mentioned the election. I'm going to come back at you on the comments, sure, because we sit here outside of the States and we're almost a bit dimwitted about that. But I had a community member, Chris Thompson. I'm just going to go through his question. I think we've touched on some of it. The CPI data coming in lower, we've mentioned that. Can we expect a 50 basis point hike at the next meeting? You referenced, in your opinion, the LIBOR market suggesting to you a 75 basis points. At what point does the interest rate on the national debt exceed what the government brings in as tax revenue? So the big also question is, how long The interest payments on the generated debt can even be sustained out of current income, out of tax, in a contracting economy with a killed retail consumer. We've already described this duality of a great depression in demand, the demand-killing depression, stubbornly high inflation. So income is definitely going to be affected for government in terms of tax receipts. How much further can they go before actually they're even borrowing to pay or creating new money just to pay interest on existing money? And then he also goes on in his question, it's quite a lengthy one, so park that one, there's a bit to unpack here. Hyperinflation or depression, I think we're going to get kind of our version of hyperstagflation, but you can give your view on that. I feel like the Fed is stuck between a rock and a hard place, he says. Either the continuing raising of rates and push the economy into a depression, I think we're going to get that, or the reverse policy too early and cause hyperinflation on the dollar. I feel less so than that, but we end up with both in the end. Where are we on the path to the CBDC? Also your comments on BRIC nations. So there's quite a bit in there. Take your time and I'll prompt you if you need any help.
Sure. Let's start with the first one. I agree with you, Francis, that we're going to be looking at kind of a hyperstagflation environment going forward. Commodity inflation is not going to attenuate. Therefore, so we have that. I think the question that what the questioner is not addressing is what I've been saying, which is why is the Fed raising interest rates when they have demand side tools and this is a supply side problem? Therefore, when you ask that question, you now have to get out of the realm of monetary policy and you have to start getting into the realm of geopolitics.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the key. The Fed is trying to destroy, as you're going to hear from Daniel DiMartino Booth in a couple of hours, that Jerome Powell is trying to do a controlled demolition of the leveraged loan market, the leveraged dollar loan market, which I haven't heard her use the phrase offshore dollar leveraged loan market. That's the key to understanding this. They want to break the euro dollar market because the Fed wants control of its monetary policy. I was just sent an interview with Neil Kashkari by a friend of mine a couple days ago, and it was like a 45-minute thing. I'm like, dude, TLDR on this. And he's like, oh, at about the 40-minute mark, he says, someone asks him about the Fed funds rate of 5%. How are we going to deal with that? And Kashkari, the noted dove Kashkari, said, well, that's Congress's problem.
Yeah.
There is a fight going on between the Treasury Department and the Biden administration and the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve represents the big New York money center banks who do not want to go to a central bank digital currency. They do not want their business, their core business, which is investing in things and pulling a VIG. I mean, they're mafiosi. That's fine. If you want to call them that, that's fine. I'm not ascribing any moral, high ground to these people. They want that. They want their power to remain, whereas the Europeans want to crash their economy, destroy it through sanctions and ruinous energy policy, destroy the middle class in Europe, enter a default on the debt and issue a CBDC, a digital euro, and use that by which to quote unquote build back better into a hydrogen nuclear economy. That's their long-term goal. They're not getting off of this. Like this is reality. This is what they're doing, and everything. If once you see that, you can't unsee it, and all the daily noise does not matter. The Fed is not going to stop raising interest rates because inflation attenuated by 0.2% year over year.
No, I don't.
No, their goal is to break the European Union and to break the ECB and to stop the destruction of the world engine of energy, of ruinous energy policy for climate change. They want to break the Germans from having control over the European gas market, and I firmly believe that they're behind the Italian government's stance on a lot of this stuff. I believe that there are back channel communications going on between the New York banking system and the Russians in order to put as much pressure on the Europeans as possible financially. I also believe that the Russians have the Turks exactly where they want them in order to create a European gas, a Turkish gas hub. And guess who will be the primary beneficiary of the major economies in Europe if Turkey becomes the gas hub as opposed to Ukraine for bringing pipe gas into Europe? It will be Italy, because that's going to come in through the southern corridors, not the Nord Stream corridors. Okay, so seriously, this is a big deal, and the Germans are absolutely on board with this ridiculous, ruinous policy. They are purposefully trying to destroy themselves. The Biden administration is purposefully trying to destroy energy production here in the United States. It is a policy, and they do not care what the consequences are. And once you understand that that's the game, and you see what the Fed is doing, you can come to no other conclusion that the Fed is trying to help stave off the dissolution of the United States as a 50-state political compact. And the midterm elections prove to you that you can studiously apply money to a bunch of gaslit morons and not get the political result you absolutely needed.
I think that it seems like one of the biggest fake bribes ever took place, just on the midterms. So just there was also a comment on the question on the midterms. It seems the Generation Z, the youth vote, came in very strongly and saved Democrats. And of course, Biden had campaigned on cancellation of debt, which he had no remit to actually approve. And now a court judge has actually said that there is no way that that would be possible. So he got to show good intent without even having to pay for promises that he didn't actually really make, that people have now almost bought in. He bought the votes, literally, and has now effectively not had to pay for them as well, and said, gee, guys, I kind of wanted to do it for you, but there you go. Them lawyers and judges got in the way.
Never going to do it. The whole that was, you know, well, they're only going to get that done if they can break the Fed. Because the only way they can do debt, any kind of debt jubilee in the United States of commercial, of personal debt, is to do exactly what they're doing in Europe, which is to consolidate the debt, default on it, and go from there. Like, and they have to introduce UBI at a level, or universal basic income at a level, and MMT as a monetary policy at a level that they have not. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I see that MMT has already been attempted here.
Yes.
And now it's all being clawed back. I don't know about, yeah, you're not in the United States. I just got my notice from the IRS that I have my second annual payment due to them for the COVID relief funds and the tax breaks I got during COVID. I have to pay all that back. I had to pay over $2,000 in back taxes for 2020 at the end of last year. And I've got to pay almost $2,800 per person, by the way. Okay.
That's
all that money is coming. All that money is getting clawed back. So even worse, since they're doing that, because the fiscal position in Washington is going to be so bad coming next year, that they're even taking that much more money out of the productive economy, because there's no money in the lower classes, but the middle class is now going to have all that money clawed back. Biden wants to raise taxes, not that he's going to get it through, but this is another, it's going to be another drain on him too.
Actually, on that point, Tom, do you Biden raising taxes? I don't know how much you're familiar with the UK, which is kind of an accelerated version of the collapse of America, just a little, in some ways, a little more advanced. Not only are they still, the last measure was double-digit inflation. I think they went as high as 10.1 on their CPI, which is a couple of points on you, helped along by their collapsing currency, which was helped along by their collapsing debt, which was helped along by the fact that they were raising rates by a slower and lower amount than the Fed. And obviously, interest rate power parity then started to affect the currency, which had a knock-on effect on the debt, which then had this pension run and a virtually business market on the debt market. Which is amazing that we're sustaining a valuation for something that actually has a no bid at current price levels. But that's the Japanese yen and to the extreme, the most extreme. But anyway, all of this happening, the latest Bloomberg news is massive budget hole, because, you know, they hired and fired a prime minister and a financial guy, which they quickly threw under the bus. Not that I have empathy for him, but all these problems started long before, as you and I both know. Sure. And now the Bloomberg news is $60 billion required. New taxes. A chap with the same surname as me, I'm almost embarrassed by it, Hunt, who is very unpopular in the National Health Service, is coming out and he's looking for means to raise $60 billion. And as you say, that's not going to be the working classes that are already on a dime and are beating to nothing, that's going to have spare shekels to stump up. So this is hitting the middle and the upper middle. And given that need, surely America is not too far behind on both the tax of energy, the tax of stubbornly high inflation, the tax of losing your job and getting much lower increases and a real turn down in resale, and now actual taxes on top of that.
Oh, sure. No, you're absolutely right. And this is a typical, look, the Liz Truss, who is a moron, okay, but whoever put her in power told her what to do. gave her a financial plan that wasn't great, but it kind of looked like Donald Trump's, actually.
Stimulus, hey, yeah.
Lower some taxes, let us spend a little bit more money to protect the middle class, and let's open up reinvestment in offshore, you know, in fracking and some other things, and let's do a recapitalization of the UK while we pay for, through the nose at this point, we have to pay for the energy because of our ruinous foreign policy. The Brits have nobody to blame but themselves because of their age-old desire to destroy Russia because they can't help themselves because they're British and there's no known cure. Now, the same thing is happening in Germany. They want to, the Greens want to put a windfall profit tax on 90% of all energy taxation. They've already effectively nationalized Uniper. This is a push towards oil nationalization, in oil and gas nationalization and electricity generation in Germany. So we are now moving straight down the communist playbook to control the flow of energy. And the same thing is happening in the UK. They get rid of Liz Truss. They bring in Jeremy Hunt, who's Davos through and through. He's a EU colonialist loyalist through and through. And what is he putting forth? What I call German austerity. Raise taxes, raise regulations, cut spending. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what they always do. And they've done it to Greece, they've done it to Portugal, they've done it to Spain, they've done it to Italy, and they're doing it again. Why? Because it only improves the fiscal position, relatively speaking, by making labor unbelievably uneconomic, uncompetitive on the global stage. So they want to shore up the currency, which is the last thing you want to do with an uncompetitive labor market. You want to lower the currency and make the labor more competitive on the global market. You can't do that because why? Because this is all about bailing out the bondholders.
Yeah.
Guess who and who are the bondholders here? All the same people who just threw Liz Truss out of office. Is anybody confused that this happened a week after Liz is put in the ground and Charles, the ultimate freaking, you know,
world
greeny socialist, comes to power? And we have major coups happening left and right all around the world. Like the unseen hand of the British crown is everywhere here. And guess who is, by the way, probably the most vulnerable? Whose actual pile of actual assets is the most vulnerable to the Fed declaring independence from the Bank of England by raising interest rates aggressively? Well, the British crown, because they're the only ones with any freaking money left in all of these offshore bank accounts. Now we look at the dollar, we look at the TIC report, and what do we see? We see the Chinese, the Japanese, and we see the three largest holders and the Saudis, the three largest holders of American sovereign debt, and they're all been sellers. They've been sellers for over a year in order to defend their currencies, in order to do all those. And who are the biggest buyers? Who's buying all this? If you look at the stock of foreign that the TIC reported, it hasn't moved very much. There's about $7.7 trillion stuffed in foreign central banks. Guess who's buying it all? Euroclear, Germany, this one, that one. Everybody associated with the European Union and the British Crown. Cayman Islands, Belgium, which is where Euroclear is. So you can see the shift here. As they sell to defend the euro, they're buying U.S. treasuries in order to keep the euro from abjectly collapsing all across the board. You've been seeing this has been going on for months. So, this is all about oil nationalization. Biden is throwing out the exact same rhetoric here in the United States. And I wrote a big article about it last week. And, when I get done this morning, I have to write about the Hunger Games Hunger Gamesization of the United States after these elections, because it's very clear that we have, what we have after these midterm elections is very clear what the dynamic is. So, the Biden administration now is going to rule by executive order and is effectively going to try and go for oil nationalization, and they're going to use it, even though they won't get it through executive order, even though they won't get it through, because they won't. What they'll do is they'll set up the GOP to oppose it, and then when the hyperstagflation, when the depression comes, they'll blame the Fed and the GOP for blocking their green agenda because we desperately need the money to recapitalize everything. That's the political playbook. I see it, and Trump is falling for it. Everybody's falling for it. It's just dumb. So as far as I'm concerned, I live in the Sunshine Republic of Florida, and eventually we're going to have to be our own country. That's what's coming.
Secession. It's interesting you mentioned in that soliloquy of answer, you mentioned the Bolshevik, the communism coming. It does feel, because the question was right about tax coming at the worst possible time for the retail consumer. It does feel like the great leveling. If you're having an awakening, it does feel like the acceleration of the great leveling, which is actually a great compression of middle classes and everybody, the polarization of anybody, even upper middle, middle, lower, and right down to working classes, to peasantry, and then the barbell, you know, the barbell economy with the bulge on the other end for the billionaire, trillionaire classes. And it just does seem, why would you raise taxes in a crushing economy? A, it's shown that raising taxes doesn't raise more revenue, generally, in normal economic conditions. B, it just causes absolute bedlam in an environment where the economy is actually turning down. So you actually want to create this Hunt, Jeremy Hunt and his new Sunak prime minister are essentially going to create a massive expansion of the welfare state. And that is going to force, it's going to be the on-ramp for UBI. It's going to be the on-ramp for the need to provide a living wage for the great unemployed, unwashed, which they've essentially created by punishing the last remaining truly entrepreneurial people that actually still make a stipend of a wage or make some money in a contracting economy with all of these, punishing them with an overburdensome tax, which is going to get on an ever narrower tax base as everybody else gets squeezed out of the game into the working poor and the great unemployed. So it just feels like a Bolshevism on-ramp for UBI and CBDC. It seems, I mean, it's not even slightly camouflaged. It just seems...
Yeah, no, they're not hiding it anymore, Francis. I think it's very obvious. Like, they're, and again, when you're dealing with psychopaths, psychopaths do not back down. Yeah. Psychopaths double down until they are beaten down. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the only way to stop a psychopath from abusing you is to beat the crap out of them. No, and this is not a
no, I agree. Figuratively.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an incitement to violence. I have to make sure we do this. We're on YouTube. I mean, this is just human psychology. Yeah. Like, they will sit there and poke you and poke you and poke you until you finally lash out and punch them in the mouth, and then you go running to the bailiff going, punch me, and then, you know, we keep going, and like, secretly smiling behind their smiling while you go to jail because they got exactly what they wanted. We can talk about this in terms of the Russia-Ukraine war. We can talk about it in every level here. Okay, this is not going to stop, and they don't know how to back down. All they know how to do is double down and accelerate. So what we're seeing is a massive acceleration. And the argument that I've been making on multiple fronts, I don't care if it's Russia, Ukraine, I don't care if it's interest rates, I don't care if it's anything else. It's that the forces that understand this dynamic, Putin in Russia, Xi in China, Powell and the commercial banks, these are my two examples. There are others, but those are the two big ones because those are the ones with real power. See the situation for what it is and understand that in order to make this work, you have to, in order to respond to this and try and get out of it, you have to go first. You have to set the timetable. You cannot let them decide when these things are going to happen. You have to force the acceleration on them at a rate that they are not prepared for. And that's why they're so angry with the Russians for attacking Ukraine on the 24th of February, because they wanted to attack the Donbass in the middle of March.
Yeah. He preempted. And you've got to preempt.
Right. And
you've got to have to use your violence example, you've just got to punch first to have a better chance of controlling the fight.
I'm an old martial artist. And when Putin said to me, you know, when Putin said, look, when you know a fight is inevitable, you know, don't wait for your opponent. Like, that's like, all I got is my taekwondo instructor in the back of my head. Go first. Attack. Don't be a counterfighter. Because counterfighters can't win a fight. All they can do is not lose a fight.
Yeah.
And that was a hard lesson for me to learn, because I'm naturally not an aggressive person. Even though I have an overbearing personality, I actually am very passive, and I actually am a very good counterfighter. And it took me years, 10 years of martial arts, actually, to learn how to attack properly.
Yeah.
Because all I wanted to do was protect myself. Yeah. So, but that is what happened in February in Ukraine. And the same thing's happening here in the United States with the Fed raising interest rates aggressively. They tried to run out the clock politically to keep Powell because they knew what Powell wanted to do. Powell told everybody what he wanted to do. He presaged all this when he raised interest rates aggressively in 2018 and was forced to go back to the zero bound because of, you know, because the markets at that moment in time weren't decoupled. The American markets weren't properly decoupled from the European markets. Zero dollar markets hadn't been, they hadn't created that separation that they now have with SOFR and LIBOR. That disconnect between SOFR and LIBOR and the American banks all having disgorged themselves of any standing interconnection via interest rate swaps, repos, and everything else with European debt. All that's done. Like there are, at the, you know, in 2019, it was only JP Morgan saying no to Eurozone sovereign debt as repo collateral. Now it's all major American banks. And now that SOFR is the law of the land and all the debt here in the United States is indexed to SOFR as opposed to LIBOR, now there's no connection. Now there's no ability to manipulate LIBOR to manipulate the American banking system. Now the Fed has every right to do exactly what they want to do. And yes, it may cause pain here in the United States, but the point of this is to cause even more pain to those who are more levered up in the offshore dollar markets, which swamp in terms of size the domestic dollar markets. So this is going to cause even more pain for those who think that they have the colonial engine of fake money to buy and to buy and fund their influence around the world and to do what they always do. That is going away. And I'm telling you people right now, the Fed is going to 6% come hell or high water. Because this is, I just threw that number out at the beginning of the year just to tweak people, just to go, oh, by the way, you don't think the Fed can go to 1? I think they're going to 6. I'm like, ah, you're crazy. And I didn't, this is a number I just pulled, literally just pulled out of my behind, right? Not just in order to tweak people, in order to get them to shock them out of their complacency about what they think is actually going on. Now we're here and they're all going, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then you have people close to the Fed and the Fed governors themselves, even the dubs, telling you what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're doing so in a way that is kind of gentle, but at the same time, you know, I don't do gentle. I only know how to like.
I loved your analogies of the strike first. They've got to, if they want to maintain the initiative, they are essentially front running an avalanche. If they slow down, they get stampeded. They've got to stay out front. They've got to stay going because otherwise it's the boulders and the sheets of ice for you. You are front running an avalanche.
That's a grand metaphor.
Yeah. And they've got to stay out front, and they've got to keep coming. Even when the data seems like it no longer supports that, they've got to keep coming because to fall back into the pack is to invite new leadership. That's not them. And that's the last actual thing they want. You either holding the whip or you're on the receiving end of the whip. I love that. And I agree with you. And you know, the 6% out of your backside, well, it's a better guess than many other people had. We've continually to bias that they're going to have to keep tightening for much longer. There's going to be too much peak, for the reasons we've given Ella, the Druckenmiller comment and many others. You can't rein it back. They have to be the new bulls because they export the pain to the other nations a little bit while they still can if they stay out in front. The minute they don't stay out in front, the relative pain gets only higher in a pain game. This is a pain game. Everyone feels pain. You can either be in acute pain or extreme pain. You know, you've got to decide the degree. But the minute you give up the whip, you're going to be in the worst variety of pain. And that's why I think they're front running the avalanche. And they've got to stay out front. And it's actually catching up even with them. And with this data, it's almost a nuisance, this data for them, because they've got to come out strong again and keep charging on the. And it kind of undermines their justification. It's interesting that you say they'll do 75, not a 50, because there was some soft talking that the rate would decrease, and December's still to come. But why is the rate coming down to 3.8 if you've got even a half still to come from 4 on top of that? Right. It should be already at 4.5. I've got a question for you, Tom. That's one thing I haven't understood, and maybe you'll have an answer for me. So we've been short the TLT. 2 years ago, we said this is the top of the bond market. It's turning. And it's done exceptionally well for us. And it's actually continued largely to go down. The irony is I also simultaneously thinking, well, junk is going to be even worse off. So I got hold of the HYG and I've been short that. And it's done well for a bit. But amazingly, it's almost like there's a better bid under the most compromised debt, junk debt, than there is over the long-term ETF. Now, my usual response to things that cannot be explained logically is the manipulation. They've got to keep it up because they're not ready to let it fall down. There are other forces of buying power there. Do you have anything better than me? It sounds very much like the gold and silver. Sometimes we sound like we're excuse makers because eventually these manipulations should be overcome. Any other reason why HYG, given this right...
I think it comes into, Francis, what I was just talking about. And again, I'm like you, I'm confused by this, but I'm going to try and vamp. And I'm going to throw some ideas at you. Maybe we'll come to some conclusion. I think what we're seeing in the long end of the yield curve from at this point of U.S. Treasuries is foreign inflows. So you have foreign inflows. Like yesterday, we had a stellar, zero hedge, stellar 30-year auction, stellar 10-year auction. Because at 4.25 or 4.3%, the stellar, these are good yields for people who have been sitting on 1.72% in these markets for years, right? So now they can go and they can roll out their leverage bets against U.S. Treasuries, and they can replace them with U.S. Treasuries.
Yeah.
So this is part of what's happening. We're also seeing a deterioration in overseas bond markets. So we have a safe haven trade coming from foreign capital. Now let's think about it domestically. Let's now shift from foreign capital pile to domestic capital pile. We can now, if we can get 3 and 4% on U.S. Treasuries here in the United States, and there's a real need for fracking debt, for infrastructure debt, and all the rest of it. If you look at some of the dividend yields on some of these freaking frackers, they're paying 25-30% dividends. They can afford to issue new debt to drill new well into this market at 9%. Because they have so much cash right now. I'll give you a perfect example. Not that this is a company that can do that because it's a royalty trust, but literally a $3 stock paying 22 cents a month right now. That's how much money they're making. Yeah. For their unit hold. This is a royalty trust, so it's not an investable company from that perspective. But just understand that that's going to transmit all the way through the Permian Basin complex, and so they're going to issue fracking debt. They can issue at 6%, 7% in this market because they're making so much money that they can even still pay dividends in this market, right? So I think that's why you see a little bit of yield compression. Then, of course, you offset some of the risk with buying a treasury or whatever you have to do in order to offset some of that risk. So that's
just to paraphrase that, to jump in.
What's that?
If I may jump in there. So possibly junk was very energy heavy, maybe, and frackers being very marginal at one point are now supremely profitable. So the key thing with marginal debt is that small changes lead to either being grossly bankrupt or grossly profitable. We may actually have a bit of an energy effect possibly in the low yield market on account of something that was sub-economic at one point when we were creating the additional swing $2 million a day by fracking that made the US energy independent under Trump, that then later was building up so much debt and was no longer economic. And then we had the big collapse in the oil price, which essentially took a lot of these guys, mothballed them for a while, and now they're all back in vogue again. And actually, the level of dividend they're paying is so much that your payback period might be so short that actually it's a good investment.
Moreover, Biden drained the SPR.
Yes, right? Correct.
So the Brent to WTI spread has been $6 to $8 now for 7 months. I've been on record saying that I think that collapses and even goes negative. I think we see WTI, in order to refill the SPR, they're going to have to refill. They're either going to have to refill with domestic oil or what we saw this morning, and I'm going to be on RT actually later this morning because they contacted me this morning to talk about this, or they're going to carve out more sanctions exemptions so that we can still import Russian oil to pad two down south. So in order to refill the SPR. So, something's got to give here. So you either, and so if the Biden administration wants to try and, play this game to keep the frackers on a drip feed, a revenue drip feed by keeping WTI prices suppressed relative to Brent, well, then he has to accept more Russian oil.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't do that, then he has to allow WTI, the WTI Brent spread to collapse meaning WTI is going to come up from -6 or -7 to Brent up to zero. And guess what? At those $7 a barrel, all those frackers are like, yeah, I can issue 7% debt.
Yeah.
And I think the market is I think the market may have sniffed this out. And that's why you're seeing this.
I don't think I've ever seen a more politicized economic misuse of state assets for political, short-term political gain in my political observations of the American economy. I don't ever think you've seen the scale of the draining. When I look at the SDR chart of how much oil has been drained out to put a lid, and this is why I also say one swallow does not a summer make when you have these data numbers from yesterday, on account of that's on the back of some obscene glut selling, not for profit, glut selling out of a strategic reserve that makes you currently deeply under-equipped to fuel an army for national defense on your own borders, never mind going anywhere else, which America loves a good excursion to do as well. I don't think I've ever seen an event so politicized. I've got another question from the community that value your opinion. Sure. So I'm going to travesty move on there. Green energy commodities, platinum. So this is from Ivar van Hoorn. So this is also a community member of ours. Green energy commodities, platinum, palladium, copper, nickel, lithium, etc., and also land. Are these safer bets in the current bearish markets? So first of all, there is the green energy. Where do you vote old energy, dirty energy, coal now? Uranium, I think, is one of my favorites. Do you go with the whole green energy agenda, given how committed nation states like Germany are, how much economic damage they're prepared to inflict on their citizens, how much inflation they're prepared to inflict, how many carbon credit costings on corporates they're prepared to inflict, the zeal lottery on green, the watermelon communism, as we call it. Do you vote with the watermelon communism assets? I think there's a lot of good ones in there. I really like platinum. I think it's going to, palladium's overshot. I think platinum to come back. But what's your take? If you were grabbing a selection of commodities, would you go green energy or old energy or any mix thereof?
I'd go a mix, but I go a mix 70-30 old energy versus green. Because anytime governments get involved, they create unsustainable booms and busts. And look, if everything we're talking about in terms of hyperstagflation and everything else, regardless of the horrific political outcome of the midterms here and what I see for 2024, which is probably the canceling of elections and the breaking of the 50-state compact in the United States by 2026, maybe 2027. If you're thinking in these terms, okay, and I am thinking in these terms now, that's how bad the midterm result was. When you think in these terms, you're thinking in terms of rationality returning to three quarters of the United States in terms of energy policy, not California, not Oregon, not New York, not Rhode Island, but from Florida up to, and I'll be honest with you, all the way up to Edmonton. I think Western Canada is now in the discussion on this. So when you start thinking in those terms, they're going to reject green energy. Okay. And this whole thing could lead us down the primrose path, like doing away with the internal combustion engine for a few years until everybody goes, you know what, this is like depreciated technology. We can put these things back on the market in like no time flat, retool all the friggin' lines and we don't have to worry about it. And like all the German companies that think that, oh, well, we're just going to build EVs for the rest of our lives, which is net energy negative and unsustainable without nuclear power. Like, and honestly, without later generation nuclear power. So minimum Gen 3, Gen 4, Gen 5, uranium-238 reactors, or we start moving to thorium. And if you start moving to thorium in the uranium-233 cycle, now all of a sudden we're into energy returned over energy invested, not the greatest of indicators, but just as a gross approximation, order of magnitude higher than either oil or uranium-238. Therefore, now we're building a decentralized power grid that they cannot control, because you can build thorium reactors that are as small as, you know, that can power a neighborhood and a burbclave, as opposed to having to power an entire city. Therefore, this is a Chinese finger trap for this climate change crowd from an energy perspective. Every time I defer to you on platinum, because I haven't looked at it recently, But every time I ever look at platinum and I look at the supply and demand numbers, all I see is a you know, a recycling market that just doesn't do anything for me. Maybe I'm missing something about current demand, you know, current stepwise change in the demand function, but I would bet on hydrogen generation catalysts of the nickel cobalt boron variety hitting the market at some point, because I used to do research into this and actually I looked at it. That there's ways of doing that are far cheaper, and they would just be, you know, drop in replacements as opposed to having to use platinum ruthenium, an 80-20 platinum ruthenium catalyst in order to do hydrogen generation. Like, there's a lot going on here in terms of the chemistry and the electrochemistry of this, which I know a lot about. Nickel cobalt boron in terms of that is an engineering problem at this point. I will be honest with you. It's not actually very difficult. So, they won't last as long. They'll have to be replaced, but it's doable. Nickel cobalt boron foam would be actually really quite fascinating. I'm bringing this up off the top of my head because I used to do this research about 10 years ago when I used to be a chemist. So I don't know. I think that maybe, you know, we're dealing with platinum that way, obviously palladium, but I never bet against copper, never bet against silver, which I also put in the industrial metals category. As far as I'm concerned, they are the two leading indicators of the industrial metals boom. Watching the silver price now break out, I think silver is your leading indicator for industrial metals. It's no longer Dr. Copper, it's now Dr. Silver, because the modern economy runs on silver demand and secondarily on copper demand. So I think copper is your confirmatory signal. A copper breakout is your confirmatory signal of what you're seeing in the silver market.
Especially with China in contraction. Yes. Because they were a very dominant copper market. There were also a lot of building going on, mm-hmm. which is greatly reduced, as you know. They haven't built what they said they would build, and a lot of that's going on. Right. So I think I agree. That's a very interesting synopsis. So just to, you took me into metals I'm not as well familiar with. You like borium? Sure. Say them again. Cobalt?
Cobalt, nickel, cobalt.
Nickel.
Boron intermetallic, right, is a very interesting thing. I used to work in this field. Like, I personally perfected an old nickel boron technology when working for a small entrepreneurial company about 10 years ago. It was a small cap about 10, 12 years ago. Actually, I spent 5 years of my life doing this and doing the process improvement on it. And I did some research into nickel cobalt boron, which was people were using if they could create a foam that would act as an 80% effective hydrogen generation catalyst to platinum ruthenium at like 1/20th the cost. Yeah. And, you know, this is an electrolysis deposition process that you deposit cobalt. It's easy. It's just a sodium borohydride thing. So this is just, you know, boron. We're not going to see a run in boron prices, for example, over this at all. Like, boron is just too abundant and it's too easy to mine. So I wouldn't worry about that as much as I would just say that it's really, if you're interested in nickel, if you're interested in cobalt, they have multiple different ways of dealing with that. So that's all I would. There's multiple angles on this, and I don't know that there's anybody in the industry actually looking into this stuff. But I'm here to tell you that maybe you should if you think they're going to a hydrogen economy, because looking at the metal hydride bond strength curve, what's known as the volcano plot in thermodynamic terms, like that, the electrodynamic, that to me is just it's a clear winner on a cost basis if somebody can solve the engineering problem. But I wasn't able to crack it 10 years ago, but I'm sure somebody could, a more talented chemist than me could. So
do you have an ETF that guys that are interested in that like that story, the nickel particularly, the cobalt, the
I don't, because I don't look as Francis, it's funny. I'm less a stock guy than I am the big picture guy. And then whenever I come up with a new idea, I go and look for, you know, basically the safest play.
The biggest equity. Yeah. The most dominant.
Yeah, and the safest play, basically, not even the biggest equity, but just the safest play from my perspective in the area, in order to tell my people, hey, this is where you want to look. You may find better stocks than me. Yeah. But here you go, because this is going to be a winner. But there's no reason to believe that one's not going to be a better winner. I'm not as interested in giving people fish as about teaching them how to figure out how to fish, right?
Yeah.
And how to look at a balance sheet and all the rest of that, and how to look at a property and all of that. So I don't, you know, that's not my, that's just not my bag.
No, that's perfect. And I respect you for just saying where you're strong and where you haven't spent the time. I just brought up rhodium. I think there was one that you met, and it's in a similar kind of category, even if I misheard you. And technically,
I mentioned ruthenium because it's ruthenium, the classic hydrogen generation catalyst is a 80-20 platinum ruthenium catalyst, but rhodium is a very important metal as well.
Yeah, this technically, and you're right about platinum. Platinum's been the great unlove. We just think it stopped going down, and it's showing some technical signs of relative overperformance to gold for the first time in a very long time. But it's still very early doors, so it's a very it's high risk play. But if that flips back to being the premium, it's 30 times more rare. It's the industrial use that saw it all go palladium that undermined it for so long. But back to the rhodium, this is a nice falling wedge. This is a log chart. And this is something that came from around $61 and traded as high as $2,574. Also looking one more impulse and it could be good to go. Just thought I'd throw in a chart there, but that's super interesting. Tom, thank you so much for being on. How do people engage with your good self on your with regards to your website and best places to find and engage with your good self?
Sure. Start with my Twitter feed at TFL1728. You can go over to the blog at tomluongo.me, which is where the public, all the public writing goes and the public podcasts and everything go. And then after that, you can go to my Patreon at patreon.com/goldgoatsandguns, where you can sign up for the newsletter. You can sign up for the, I do twice weekly video market reports on Wednesdays and Sundays that are basically video podcasts. I do technical analysis. I do bespoke chart reads for people, all that, and then obviously commentary, and then private blog posts as well. So all of that's there at Patreon. So.
Excellent. Tom, thank you so much for coming on. This is, I mean, I just felt we could have carried on for so much longer and we would have just kept drilling down. Let's do this again soon, actually. There's so much more to talk about. Thank you for bringing that US perspective. I totally enjoyed it. So gold, goats, and guns. Get it in the right order. Three billy goats, Gruff. Yep. Gold, goats, and guns. I love the goats in there, by the way. They're awesome animals. I want to even talk about the prepping and that side of things. Thanks for so much for being on. And guys, go and check it out. And in the edit, we'll put those details you shared overlaid in the video as well so that people can find it. Thanks so much, Tom. Have a great day. And good luck on RT. And well done for getting some nice exposure there.
I appreciate it, Francis. And you guys have a great afternoon. I hope this goes well for you. And yes, I'd be happy to come back on anytime.
Look forward to doing exactly that. Bye for now.